I'm speaking today with Asada Richards, who is a candidate for Houston City Council in District D. Asada, thank you for talking to me today. Why are you running for this office?
Well, I'm running for City Council to represent District D because I have very strong connections to District D. It has meant a great deal to me, and it has invested greatly in me. An important part of who I am is based on the relationships and the support I've had in District D. Primarily, I was raised in District D by my grandparents in Southeast Houston. I graduated from J.S.H. Jones High School. I was a single mother in high school. I went on to the University of Houston. I dropped out of the University of Houston, and then I had some amazing community support from Project Grow House, the Houston Area Urban League, Shape Community Center. A lot of people in the community supported me and my son and helped me finish school. And then I was able to go on to Penn State and earn my PhD in sociology. And so I have a strong relationship. Ada Edwards was one of my first mentors. When I was 16, I worked with Ada Edwards on the Free South Africa campaign. Judah Mboni was one of my mentors, Sylvia K. Brooks. And so I really believe in these communities. I think I represent the best that the communities of District D have to offer. I think District D is strategically located in the city. It's the door from downtown, the door from Pearland, the door from Clear Lake. And I think that the district is sorely in need of some considerable investment and someone that can help to continue to build the community's capacity to respond to the challenges. So I think I have a story that comes out of the district that says we are better than everyone's expectations. We are rich in history and culture, and we have an amazing contribution to make to the city. And I want to represent that and be part of that continuing story.
Okay. You currently serve on the Housing Commission in the City of Houston, mm-hmm. appointed by Mayor Parker. Tell me about what you do on the Housing Commission.
As a board member for the Board of Commissions for the Houston Housing Authority, which is a $180 million agency, and it is the primary agency that provides supportive housing in the City of Houston. So our job is to provide housing in a simplistic sense, but our job is to really provide opportunities and resources for mobility and economic independence of our residents and to contribute to the vibrancy of a community. And so we use our mission at the Housing Authority to provide housing, but also to provide economic investments in communities. A clear example is our plans and our considerations in Southeast Houston in terms of bringing grocery stores, in terms of bringing housing, even in terms of bringing home ownership opportunities. So our job is to contribute to individuals' lives, but to improve the quality of their lives so that they can move out of economic disadvantage into self-sufficiency. And so we want to provide housing with dignity, but we also want to contribute to the vibrancy of a community.
You have some personal experience with this as well, don't you?
I do.
Tell me more about that, please.
Well, I've lived as a single mother. I've lived in public housing. In fact, when I was a senior in high school and became a mother, I lived in a housing community in Sunnyside known as at 5050 Sunflower. It's a very well-known housing community. And so I saw the benefits and I saw the challenges of living in that community. And I know what can happen when you have nurturing environment to support people to really make changes in their lives. And so because of the support that I received there, I was encouraged to go on to school, to continue to stay in school. And I want that for people deserve to live in dignity. When I came to Project Grow Houses, I was living in the lowest economic tract in Third Ward, which we call the Bottoms, Northern Third Ward. I was living in a duplex with 13 people, a two-bedroom duplex with 13 people, me and my son. So I know what it is to live in abject poverty. And I know what toll it takes on your self-esteem to not live with decency and respect and dignity. I know what that feels like. And so my job is always to challenge those conditions. Right now in the Houston Housing Authority, we're working on creating a new policy in terms of our residents and their children. We're working on asking our residents to make sure that any child under the age of 21 is registered in school every year that they come back and recertify for housing, because we have to teach our children and allow our residents to know if you do not seek education, then you will have very few opportunities to live outside of poverty, and your children to live outside of poverty. So I know what it takes to overcome these difficult challenges, and my position on the Houston Housing Authority, I've shown that I can advocate for the resources and the changes necessary to assist communities in a profound way. I'm a sociologist, so that means I'm about processes and policies that change outcomes.
Okay. The mayor has had some focus on homelessness in her term, including focus on homeless veterans.
Absolutely.
Talk to me a little bit about the efforts that have been done, but I also want to know your thoughts about the very controversial ordinance that was passed regarding regulation of feeding homeless. Mm-hmm. So please talk to me about those things.
Well, we've been a partner. In fact, we have led many of the initiatives, and Tori Gonzalez, who's our president and CEO, has been at the forefront of asking the Houston Housing Authority to take on this challenge of housing veterans. And so we've had 100 by 100 initiative, and then the 100,000 homes initiative. And I think that's a perfect example of what we need to, how we need to approach the social problems, because those initiatives is really about creating what we call a social safety net around veterans, saying, yes, we want to provide veterans with housing, but we want to provide them with resources and an understanding of how we can help them overcome the barriers to maintaining their housing benefits, because we know we can move people from homelessness into housing, but they don't stay in that housing because they have some other challenges that they have to deal with. And so that's been a success. You know, we've met the 100 by 100 challenge. We've exceeded it. We're taking on a new challenge. And I think that's a model that we have to go into communities with challenging populations of what I call concentrated disadvantage. Some neighborhoods have concentrated disadvantage. It's not just being homeless, but it's also having a mental illness, also having substance abuse, also having a number of medical issues, a number of challenges that really have trapped people into circumstances. And so in terms of the ordinance, one of the things I like to focus on and what I try to think about is, what is the problem? What is the problem we're facing? And I think the mayor expressed that the problem was the lack of regulation and a process in which people were feeding the homeless. And so it was creating we call it unintended consequences, right? We do good and then there's some unintended consequences. And the litter and the traffic and the, you know, the lack of understanding, you know, how do we really serve this population? And I think that for me, I want to sit down with the individuals who I think are part of the circumstances that bring us to this problem, as well as that can be part of the solution. And so I think that the process would have been best served if everyone could have gotten at the table around this issue and then decided, how can we really work on making sure that we assist people who need to be assisted in a way that serves the invested interests of the city. Because at the end of the day, this is a system, and we all have to participate and contribute to the system, and the system has to work for everyone. So not just City Hall, but also communities, not just for communities, but for visitors, not just for visitors, but homeowners, not just from homeowners, but business, people who own businesses. And I think that's the challenge of any system, to make sure it's working efficiently to everyone's invested interests. And so there was a strong reaction to that there is not a care and concern for the homeless, which we know isn't the entire story, because the city has put a lot of invested interest in ending homelessness and dealing with homelessness, particularly with veterans. And I want the city to turn to also looking at families, homeless families, because we know that adults with children are right there up there with the largest number of homeless individuals rising in this city and in the nation. So my job on city council is to look at problems in a systematic way and then find creative solutions that really allow everyone to have input into how we move forward.
Okay. What do you see as the biggest priorities for the district, and what would be your main priorities as council member if elected?
My main priority would be investment for revitalization and development in District D. As I say, District D is the door, is a very prominent door to the city. Again, door from downtown, the door from Pearland, the door from Clear Lake. And those doors need to look well, right? They need to look good. And for that to happen, we've got to do some considerable investment in the district. In infrastructure, in business opportunity, employment opportunities, home ownership, also providing adequate housing for renters. Because part of the district has a very diverse economic profile. And so you have some people doing very well who can buy homes and move into homes. And then you have some individuals who are not in that position, but they still need to live in housing with dignity. Because when people live with housing and dignity, they can make a contribution to the community. So investment and revitalization in the district. We need to make sure that we have neighborhoods that are attractive to people moving in. Parks, sidewalks, lighting, amenities that improve the quality of life. And so at the Houston Housing Authority, I've had a wonderful opportunity of building those partnerships with private and public investment to come in. And so our ideas of bringing in a grocery store is that us as a public entity purchasing the land and then doing a national RFP to bring in the private market to come in and invest with the grocery store. So that's going to be my job, coordinating all of that, because development is happening in District D, but it's not always happening to benefit everyone equally. And we know in particular neighborhoods, those that are the most economically vulnerable are being pushed out. And so that's a problem, and I like to think that there is an opportunity for us to create a diverse neighborhoods and diverse communities that accommodate everyone and everyone's need. These are very historic communities. They have made a wonderful contribution to the city, and we need to maintain the historical and cultural significance of these neighborhoods. And that's going to be my job, leading that charge on investment, revitalization, and development in the district that respects the history and culture of the wonderful neighborhoods of District D.
Okay. Well, as you know, the city recently made some changes to its ordinances about mm-hmm. development and density, Chapter 42. Mm-hmm. What's your view of the changes made in Chapter 42?
I think Chapter 42 worries a lot of people in District D because it's a signal to them that the door to developers is swinging wide open. And I think that there are many things about Chapter 42 that can work for communities. The problem I see it is that does the city have the resources necessary in the permits department and in the appropriate departments to assist communities affecting development, right? Because that's what communities want to do. And some communities are in a better position to do that than others. And the question is, does Chapter 42 provide the necessary resources so all of our communities can really affect what's happening in the in their neighborhoods? And I think that's the concern. I'd say one of the benefits of Chapter 42 that it's allowed neighborhoods and communities to pull out their deed restrictions to make sure that those deed restrictions represent what they want to see happening in their community. If they don't, I was at the Crestmont Civic Association and they had put together some changes, amendments to their deed restrictions. So it's been a wonderful opportunity for communities and neighborhoods to have that process. The disadvantage is that I was in another Kennedy Heights neighborhood and we were talking about deed restrictions last night, and they didn't have all the resources they needed to make the changes to their deed restrictions, and that's going to be a problem. And I think it was said that the neighborhoods who have the most resources and the greatest ability to organize their homeowners or the residents in their community will be the ones who will be in the best position in the Chapter 42 conversation. And so that's a concern for me. So my job, and I've done what I can, is to reach out to those communities that need that assistance. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to build some partnerships with our law schools in the city to go out to communities and help them with those legal documents to make sure they're in positions to really act in the best interest of their neighborhoods.
Okay. When you talk about resources, let's talk about that. Resources really means finances. Mm-hmm. What's your view of the city's financial situation at this point?
Well, you know, through all indicators, the city is doing fabulously well. I mean, we are one of the most livable cities, the coolest cities. You know, our housing market is skyrocketing. They can't build them enough, fast enough. The number of rental properties, you know, the time that they're on the market is very short. So we know that in many ways the city is doing well, right? And so my question is, how can city government take advantage of these good economic times? And for me, it's about efficiency and making sure that everyone is paying their fair share, but that we're using the resources that the city has as efficient as possible. And so many of my questions about how are we using the dollars that we have and how are we prioritizing those dollars to really put monies and resources where they're most needed. So I've said this before, you know, I think that when we are the pretty girl in the room, or the pretty lady, we should treat ourselves like the pretty lady. So everybody wants to move to Houston. Everyone wants to be in Houston. And so with the number of companies, corporations coming in, we should use that position to our advantage to increase our tax base. Because we need to make sure that our citizens aren't being unduly burdened with the financial responsibilities in the city. Everyone needs to pay their share. If Houston is going to continue to prosper, we've all got to pay our fair share. And then we've got to use those resources as responsibly as possible. So I think the city has some great financial opportunities, and I think with efficiency and accountability, we can continue to do well, but we can also do much, much better, because everyone is not benefiting from the prosperity in this city.
One issue that often comes up when discussing the city's finances is the pensions. Mm-hmm. As you know, Mayor Parker has been trying to get a bill passed to subject the firefighters' pension fund to meet and confer mm-hmm. requirements mm-hmm. as the police and municipal employees' mm-hmm. pensions are. She's not had much luck. The firefighters oppose these mm-hmm. efforts. What's your opinion? Do you support the efforts to get a bill passed to subject the firefighters' pension to meet and confer?
Well, I'll tell you what I said to the firefighters. The firefighters worked hard for the relationship that they have and for the benefits that they have, and they receive that through the voters. So I'd have to say, I think if the voters want meet and confer, if meet and confer is going to happen, then the voters should decide if it's going to happen or not, because there has to be protection for workers. And coming from a working class family, my grandfather retired from the city. My father worked for the city. My godmother works for the city now. And so I know that there needs to be some protections and safeguards to make sure that workers are adequately taken care of. At the same time, I know that cities across this country are dealing with the pension issue. And it is an issue of how changes in our financial markets and the private sector have affected public dollars and public employees. And so I think we have to look at this situation very carefully. We want what's in the best interest of the city, but we want to always protect the interests of those who have given their lives to make sure that the city works and operates. And so I move very carefully around this issue of taking any rights or privileges that workers have earned, and the firefighters went out on the streets and they block walk like I block walk to earn their negotiating power. And so if that's going to be changed, I would like that to be done by the will of the citizens of the city of Houston.
Okay. The current vehicle for improving infrastructure in Houston, streets and drainage, is Rebuild Houston. What is your view of how Rebuild Houston is going, and where do you see opportunities to improve it?
Well, I have met with several of the engineers that was a part of that plan, including Jeff Ross, and I do have some questions, and I think my questions mirror the questions of citizens in the city. And as you know, there's been a lot of discontent in District D around Rebuild, and it's really about the history of propositions and bonds in the city, in the African American community. There's a strong sense that our communities don't get their adequate amount of investment from these propositions and bonds? And I think that's the question. I think that greater transparency needs to take place. And I'll tell you my clear and strong position on this. I am opposed to the idea that every neighborhood goes into a pot and there is, quote unquote, a fair opportunity for each neighborhood to receive dollars from Rebuild. Because I believe that there's been some considerable disinvestment in some neighborhoods rather than others. And I think that should be accounted for. I would like an accounting system that says how much money has the city spent in each of the districts. And how much money do each of the districts have available to do infrastructure improvements? We have all a number of quasi-government agencies, right, like TORs and management districts. And some neighborhoods have more of those than others. And some neighborhoods have more money than other neighborhoods. And so for some neighborhoods, they are keenly dependent on those dollars from Rebuild. And some other neighborhoods, those dollars aren't nearly the major sources of money in their community. That needs to be taken into consideration. So we need to consider a number of factors when distributing this money. Because I've said this over and over again. I think that a street in South Park or Sunnyside, a major street in Sunnyside that needs some work is different than a street in River Oaks or the street on Kirby, right? Because those neighborhoods have many more resources and amenities. But when you have a bad street with bad sidewalks, a not-so-good park, bad lighting, all of those things create a conservative interest of disadvantage. So it's concentrated disadvantage. So for Rebuild, for me, we need to use these dollars wisely. It's an opportunity for us to invest in some of the most challenged neighborhoods, and that needs to be considered. When you look at the Rebuild list, many of the projects in District D are low priority. Why are they low priority when we know those neighborhoods have systematically not received the investment dollars as other neighborhoods have in the city for one reason or another? So for me, Rebuild has got to be used as an opportunity to make some smart investments in neighborhoods that have not had the dollars that they deserve and they need. Some of these neighborhoods are really on the bubble. They're at the crossroads, are really prospering or spiraling down further into disadvantage. And we need to use these dollars to make sure that we lift those neighborhoods and give them an opportunity to really grow, thrive, and be revitalized. So I'm still really not happy with how that money is being distributed, and I think we need to look at all of these matrices about how that money is spent in particular neighborhoods. And also, I want to make this challenge. Mayor Parker came up with a very smart program called Houston First, where she said that we will give consideration. And it's 3-5% if a contractor puts in a bid. 3-5% is considered if they are a Houston company and they're hiring Houston First. We could use that same model to say neighborhood first hiring. At the Houston Housing Authority, what we've done is said for you to receive consideration in terms of contracts with the Houston Housing Authority, we're asking you to include residents from the Houston Housing Authority in your hiring plan. We're also saying that we're asking you to consider minority contractors, subcontractors, and minority small businesses. And if you tell us you're going to do that, then the next time you come before us with a proposal, you will be evaluating on that. And if you don't, that will affect your ability to do business with us again. And in terms of hiring residents from the Houston Housing Authority, you either hire them or you put money into a training program so that they can develop their skills to be hired someplace else. So we use all of our dollars as far as we can for investment in our neighborhoods. And I think that's the plan that Rebuild should use. And then communities will look at it differently. Because right now, communities are very discouraged because we see Rebuild signs showing up in other neighborhoods and people are wondering, why not my street? How long have we asked for this to happen? How long have we been making 311 phone call. So again, without transparency and an understanding, people are very discouraged, and I'm very discouraged that Rebuild is really serving the best interests of the community.
All right. You talk about Houston's reputation nationally doing well. One of the things behind that is it's our reputation for being a great place to eat. Mm-hmm. Our restaurants and now our food trucks are very much in the public eye. And a few months ago, the food truck came to City Hall to ask them to change ordinances to allow them to operate downtown in the medical center. That was not taken up at the time, but it is likely to come up again in the future. Do you support their efforts to get ordinances changed to allow food trucks to operate downtown?
Well, I support us thinking about the benefits of having economic diversity in all markets, and also for us to support small business owners, and food trucks are small business owners. I think this really is an issue of really trying to understand, again, bringing to the table the business owners in downtown, the restaurant owners in downtown, and the food truck owners, and also city officials to really understand what are the challenges for you taking advantage of Houston. Houston is rated as the city that eats out more than any other city in the country. So we know that there are opportunities there. The question is, how can we accommodate all of those opportunities? And so I am always encouraging in Northern Third Ward, where I live and work, we've been constantly, you know, looking to food trucks to come in because we don't have enough restaurants in that neighborhood. And we think that's a wonderful opportunity. So I'm very much in support of food trucks and in support of their participation in our economy. The question is, how can we accommodate the needs of the brick and mortar institutions as well as the food trucks institutions? And I think the conversation, we haven't found a solution to that. So my job, and of course my concern, is how can we accommodate everyone's needs, because we all have to participate in the economy. So I'm very much encouraging the food trucks, and I wish they would, you know, in addition to the medical center in downtown, look at other neighborhoods of opportunity and see the welcome mat is out. Come to District D, the welcome mat is out. We have some food trucks at the nightclubs, but you know, we have growing industry and growing populations in our neighborhoods, and I would love for them to come there and then have a continued conversation of what are the needs and the concerns about changing the ordinance. What is wrong with the current ordinance, and how are they not supporting your expansion? And then how can we accommodate the concerns of the brick and mortar institutions downtown?
All right. In 2001, there was a charter amendment passed in the city of Houston that forbade it from offering domestic partner benefits to its employees. As you know, the world is changing, for the better, I think. And you know, a number of Texas cities have passed their own ordinances to allow domestic partner benefits for their employees. If a movement comes up to overturn that charter amendment and allow the city to offer domestic partner benefits to its employees, is that something you would support?
I would strongly support protecting the financial and investment interests of all citizens in this city. We are supposed to be a world-class city, and I think that a world-class city protects the civil and the human rights of all of its citizens in that city. And we're not talking about giving people benefits they haven't earned. These are benefits that they have earned. And so for me, coming from a community that has always struggled for recognition and rights and dignity and protections underneath the law, I'm very sensitive when we violate and do not protect the rights of all of those within our communities and within our city. And that the Houston Housing Authority, we have included a protection of sexual orientation in terms of housing. And so, you know, the African American community knows a lot about systematic abuses and how the laws have not always protected us and have not been on the side as allies for us. Protection against individuals who wanted to harm us and deny us things that were rightfully ours. So coming from that history and from a community that struggled with those issues, I stand squarely for the need to protect the most vulnerable, and those individuals will be denied what is justly theirs.
Okay. I'm asking everybody this question. Who are you supporting for mayor this fall?
I would like to say that I'm very, very excited by the mayoral race. I'll start by saying that. I think that the mayoral race has brought up a lot of issues. And I think that is also exciting people about district races. So when I'm out in the community, I say, when you vote for the mayor on November the 5th, you'll have to vote for a new city council representative because your current representative is term limited. So for many people who wouldn't even think about the district, they are thinking about the district because of the mayoral race. And so I want to say that I'm very grateful to Mayor Anise Parker for her the opportunity she has given me by serving on the Houston Housing Authority as a vice chair. And so I am very strongly in support of Mayor Parker because she has supported me. With that being said, there's still a lot of time to November 5th. And so based on, I attend the forums, I go out to the events, I look at the candidates, I've met Mr. Ben Hall, I met Mayor Parker, and so I'm considering all of the candidates, even Mr. Cook. So my job as any voter is to make sure that I'm informed on the issues. So I've yet to, make a definitive statement about who I'm supporting, but I will definitely be supporting the candidate that has a plan for investment in District D and a candidate that would be sensitive to the needs of the community. And so with that being said, I'm still making up my mind. I got a little time yet. We're under 90 days. Early voting starts at the end of October. But, and I have to say about Mr. Ben Hall, Ben Hall has been a strong advocate in the African-American community. He's taken on some legal cases that have been near and dear to the hearts of the communities of District D, and that means a lot. So it's going to be a tough decision, but Mayor Anise Parker has made some investments in me, and I appreciate that, and Ben Hall has made some considerable investments in the communities of District D. So I have a tough decision to make, and I like Mr. Cook. We've had some good conversations, and he's been very involved in grassroots organizing, which is a community that I come from. So I'm still, the verdict is still out for me. I haven't decided yet who I'm going to vote for.
All right. And when people go to vote in November, mm-hmm. there are many candidates running in District mm-hmm. D. Why mm-hmm. should they vote to make you the next council member and not one of your many opponents?
I believe that the communities of District D should vote for me because I've shown through my participation on the Board of Commission for the Houston Housing Authority that in that position, I will advocate strongly for my community. And in that position, I've used that position to make some changes from investment dollars to policies at the Houston Housing Authority. We've strengthened our MWMB program. We've strengthened our program that says hire residents first. We've advocated strongly to bring much of the $100 million of investment that we'll have into District D, and I've shown that in given an opportunity, I can strongly advocate and be a bridge builder for my community to make sure that my community is at the table and resources come in. Also because I've represented this district with the utmost of dignity no matter where I've gone, from here to Pennsylvania, from a graduate student at Penn State University to a faculty at the University of Pittsburgh. I've shown everywhere I've gone that I can represent my community in the way that it deserves to be represented, that I represent integrity, I represent commitment, I represent a dedication to hard work and a dedication to people who need a voice. And I've always been that voice. And I think that public service should be a continuation of your life. It shouldn't be a detour. No one should look and say, why are you running? People should look at your life and say, oh, it makes sense you're running to represent your district. And I think my story fundamentally shows that from being raised in this community, being raised by this community, coming out of these neighborhoods, coming back. I made a choice to leave academia and come back to District D and to work and serve in a wonderful organization known as Project Row Houses, to serve on the Houston Housing Authority, to be a faculty member at the university I attended school at, to work with single mothers to make sure they finish their education like I did. So I think I'm the District D's story. I'm the District D's poster to say, you know what, we're so much better than you've ever given us credit to be, and we can continue to defy expectations. And that's who I am, and I will always work on behalf of my district tirelessly. And finally, I want to say that I think of all the candidates, I have a model for leadership that's distinctive. I call it community-based leadership. I won't lead for, but I'll lead with the people of District D. I'll have a town hall meeting. We'll set an agenda. I'm not asking you to vote for me and go home. I'm asking you for vote for me and to continue to engage in the process. We have a political process that's very discouraging. All it ever asks people to do is to vote. And then it says, we're Santa Claus, so let's tell you everything we got for you. That is not going to work in District D. If the community is going to get better, we've got to make it better collectively together. We've got to invest our times and our resources in this district. One person on city council is not going to do it. And I don't promise that. What I promise is that I will put together a leadership model that will include our community and engage our community. And we will have a winning strategy to decide on how we will move forward on the priorities in District D. I'm a fresh, new face. I'm a younger person. I'm an African-American woman. I have a lot to give and contribute. And I've shown that by all my personal accomplishments in my life. And so District D is an opportunity. A vote for me is an investment in the future of the district, and that's why I'll ask to be the representative on city council come January 2014.
Sada Richards, thank you very much for talking to me today.